Are you embarrassed yet? I mean, I am. I'm pretty embarrassed at the representation of our country on a global scale. I mean, I'm embarrassed. I'm also pretty just darn upset and concerned about our future when you look at what's happening right now on the border down in Del Rio, Texas, and that monstrosity of a situation that, by the way, no one in the administration can quite get their head around. I'm still waiting for Kamala to go to the actual border. And then you combine that with that UN performance by the president, who clearly still is struggling to put one word in front of the other at times, and really had kind of a message that I guess boiled down to, I'm not Trump. Well, I'm sorry. You know what? The whole I'm not Trump thing, that's not going to get you very far anymore, because you're now the president, right, Mr. Biden, President Biden? So now you get a pretty big job, and it's not okay to sit there and blame others when you screw up in Afghanistan, or when you screw up at the border, or when you screw up with the economy, or with not making sure that enough people have the vaccine right now. You know, you can include the whole FDA debacle in all of this. This is on Joe Biden. And for him to try and wiggle out of it, you know, by just saying, well, you know, I'm not Trump, I'm sorry, it's not going to fly. I mean, and by the way, that UN speech was, yes, embarrassing, but also I think sent a very mixed message. One, the globalists are back in town, right? They're in charge. We want to work with China. We want to work with everyone, except you don't really. You don't really, because look, France is pulling its ambassador. And for goodness sake, she just deserted somebody that a country that you helped for 20 years. So how do you sit there and have it both ways? I mean, you can't really. I mean, what this tells you is that the elites are going to get what the elites want and everybody else be damned. I mean, that's just part of the problem. I talked yesterday about the whole AOC tax the rich dress, right? Which isn't it rich? Because it turns out that the designer that made the tax the rich dress, who's dating a billionaire, Seagram Fortune, apparently, according to the New York Post and the New York State Department of Taxation and Finance, has not been paying her employee payroll taxes, nor, according to the IRS, has she been doing it on the federal front, and in fact owes roughly $103,000 in back taxes. So, you know, when I get frustrated about this stuff, it's with reason, because whether it's AOC or Ilhan Omar or Rashida Tlaib or Cori Bush or Bernie Sanders, somehow they do just fine and their friends do just fine, but it's the middle class that winds up paying the price. Speaking of Ilhan Omar, this is an interesting story. So she went on MSNBC on Joy, oh, what is her name? Reed's show. Yes, that very controversial woman who talks out of both sides of her mouth and had said some really, frankly, homophobic, disgusting things, and really not in keeping with somebody clearly who's, you know, on MSNBC. Let's just leave it at that, right? But anyway, so she's got a very sordid past, but nonetheless, she's still employed. And she's got Ilhan Omar, the Democrat from Minnesota, on her show saying the U.S. is obviously, quote, obviously racist for the systemic racism that we're confronting right now. Keeping the refugees from Haiti from entering the country immediately, you know, 10, 15,000 of them, this woman believes is because of systemic racism. I mean, wow. You know, I love how systemic racism is to blame for everything. Let's take this logic a step further, okay? Because if really systemic racism is to blame for anybody not having the same whatever in life, right? The same status or success or bank account or whatever. I mean, they blame systemic racism for any perceived inequality. Well, then the fact that she's not president, is that systemic racism? The fact that she's not yet a senator, is that systemic racism? Oh, and by the way, the fact that they're requiring, mandating vaccines at corporations, and they tried in New York to say, okay, we're mandating, you can't even go to a grocery store or into a drugstore or into a restaurant or into a gym if you don't have a vaccine card. Well, wouldn't that be systemic racism? Because the people that are actually losing out in that case are predominantly, in a place like New York City, African-American. If you look at the statistics, and Newsweek did an interesting study or a report on this, where they showed that the majority of people that actually weren't vaccinated in some of these urban areas were African-American, and the second highest rated group of people that were not vaccinated happened to be Hispanic. So I'm just trying to follow their logic. If we really are to assume that systemic racism is to blame for all economic inequality, then therefore you would think you couldn't mandate all these vaccine requirements because that would be systemic racism. Right? I mean, I'm just trying to follow their logic. Not that I agree with any of it. Anyway, she told Joy Reid, when it comes to our immigration policy for so many years, cruelty has been very much embedded in it. Yeah, I guess it was really cruel of us as a nation to let her and her family in. Anyway, there is an obviously systemic racism at play here, she says. We've seen people come to the border, and the fact that we're dealing with mainly Black migrants and Black immigrants and asylum seekers at the border in this way kind of speaks to the kind of racism, systemic racism, that is embedded in that department and all the departments that deal with our immigration policy. She mentioned, of course, that Haiti's a poor nation. It's all America's fault. Everything is your fault. Everything is my fault, except for the fact that, you know what? All this systemic racism that they're talking about and slavery, a lot of Americans weren't even here. Their families weren't even here when all that happened. I mean, it's just a convenient excuse. And I got to say, it's really kind of tragic because I thought our country was getting to the point, for goodness sakes, we've had an African-American president. We now have a Black American, African-American female vice president. I would like to say that, you know what, we've kind of turned the corner on a lot of this, or at least we had until they made it a political issue. And when I say they, I mean all of Washington, D.C. I mean both sides. I mean, everybody's sort of in on this and they keep making this an issue. She's out there blaming everybody else because we won't take all the Haitians into the country. I mean, what do they think this is? It's like some kind of free for all. America's supposed to be the welfare nation that just takes everyone. No, it's not possible. It's not actually economically feasible or possible. And we need to actually think about what's best for our people and for our country. I mean, that's the logical thing to do. The logical thing to do. And yet, there's not a lot of logic. Not any logic, it seems, from these Democrats in Washington, D.C. I mean, we've been talking about the international aspect to all this and the kind of, how shall I say, the attempt at trying to make nice with China. China, by the way, who's going through all kinds of stuff right now. You're seeing they're experiencing their kind of Lehman moment. I talked about this on yesterday's podcast. I do not believe it's going to be any kind of systemic contagion issue, only because it's not a company whose debt is widely held around the world, including by U.S. banks or European banks. So I believe that that should be mostly contained, any problems that they have. And the Chinese government allegedly saying, we're not going to help. Okay, that is kind of Lehman-like, right? So any kind of spillover effect should theoretically be contained to Asia, primarily China. Now, there is a possibility that any company that trades aggressively with China may feel the effect of that. But keep in mind, the way our trade imbalances work, we're the ones that are importing most of the stuff from China, right? We're the ones getting the cheap goods from China. They're not buying as much from us. So again, we're somewhat insulated, and we should be hopefully insulated even more. I mean, if they start to go downhill, I think we need to, again, start thinking about ourselves first. They are a big trade partner, but maybe we need to kind of move that a little bit aside. I mean, we've talked about TPP 2.0, and there's a chance that maybe that should come about right now as we, the Western world, the free world, starts to think about how can we work together and really, you know, let China kind of do its own thing. Anyway, I bring this up because it leads me to what I wanted to talk to you about, which is the importance of computer privacy, the importance of making sure that all of your data is safe. We've talked about IronNet, which is a company that's in the news lately, started by the former head of the NSA, Keith Alexander, whom I know and I've known since he started that company, knew before he started that company. And it's just been seeing explosive growth. Why? Because corporations need this protection. Well, you know who else needs this protection? You and me, right? Our own email needs this protection. Our own computers need this protection. And so I'm so happy to tell you about a company, brand new company out there that actually is working aggressively to make sure your information on your email is always protected. You know, you think that all these email providers like Google and Yahoo are free, you know, Hotmail. Oh, we've got free email. Well, the thing is, it's not really free, right? Nothing in life is free, as your mother should have taught you. But they say they're free. They're not really free because they're reading all your email and they're figuring out what it is that you want to buy and how they can market to you. And then they take that data and they sell it and they market specifically to you. And there you have it. And so that is why I started using StartMail. And I want you to look at this too. You can get a wonderful deal. By the way, if you sign up, you'll get a 50% off. I've worked out something special for you because the viewers of this program deserve it. And I know that you care about your privacy like I do. So you'll get 50% off your first year if you go to startmail.com/Trish. It's great because you know what? It's going to keep your email private. That's important right now. Yeah, every email can actually be encrypted, even if the recipient doesn't use encryption. And so when you delete an email from StartMail as well, it's actually deleted. You know, when you delete on Gmail, it's not ever really deleted. And same thing with the other provider. So this is an important feature. StartMail is seamless. You know, you can transfer all of your email right now on another provider right to StartMail. And then you've got it right there. And so this is important in terms of preventing phishing attacks, in terms of preventing privacy issues. I mean, it's kind of a no-brainer. Just like companies need this, I think individuals need this. And so I encourage you right now to go to startmail.com, use my name, the code word Trish, T-R-I-S-H, startmail, S-T-A-R-T, mail.com/T-R-I-S-H. You're going to get 50% off your first year. And I think you're going to be really happy because you know what? People shouldn't be reading your email. It's just not right. You know what else is not right? What else is not right is what the president is doing or trying to do right now with our Supreme Court in the United States of America. I mean, it's really disturbing. He has an entire commission set up to examine our court and to try and figure out how we can reorder the court or restack the court, or let me just use plain English, pack the court so that liberals are in charge. I mean, think about that. They want to politicize the Supreme Court of the United States of America. Our founding fathers would be like rolling in their graves right now. I mean, there's so much I think that our founding fathers would be seriously disturbed by, including their own reputations these days, given how the likes of Ilhan Omar and others whom we were just talking about like to discuss them. But listen, I still consider them some of the most brilliant people to have ever lived. And this nation, this country is what it is because of them and because of the foresight they had. And part of that foresight included the creation of the Supreme Court as being a separate, independent entity, different from Congress, different from the Oval Office, the executive office. You need that. You need that legislative branch. And they need to maintain their distance and they need to maintain their independence. And they do not need to be packed with whatever political party is in power. Don't forget, once that party packs the court, it becomes increasingly difficult for any other party to get in there, into the Oval Office, that is, right? Because if you pack the court and you have all your judges on there, well, then everything goes your way and nobody else is ever heard from again. It would make it very difficult, I think, for conservatives to be able to take a stand and to be able to have a voice. And so regardless, however, of what side of the political aisle you are on, I think this is an important issue that you need to address and you need to confront. Again, whether you're left or right, you should believe, as an American, in the independence of our Supreme Court. And so I want you to do like I did, team up with a great group, First Liberty. They are an independent law firm, nonprofit law firm, and they are making this their cause. They have a letter in to President Biden. They are looking for as many signatures as they can get, well over 100,000 right now. I encourage you to put your name on that list. Go to supremecoup.com, supremecoup, Supremecourt.com and do your part to really ensure that that Supreme Court stays independent and we help preserve the integrity, really, of our country. There's so much going on right now, and I think it's a pretty important time. We've got the Fed, of course, meeting today, and we can talk about that a little bit more tomorrow. I've said all along, you know, regardless of what they say, here's what you need to remember. The Federal Reserve wants the United States economy to work. They want the markets to be moving higher. So it's not as though the Federal Reserve is going to say, okay, we're going to just pull the rug out from under tomorrow. They're going to do everything they can to really take this entire tapering process in lockstep and communication with the market. So nobody's caught off guard. And I'm not saying it's the best way. In fact, I in many ways don't believe that the Federal Reserve should be involved at all, because they typically have a tendency to create other kinds of bubbles and other kinds of problems. But right now, the financial engineering is sort of working for them. And I really don't think, especially with Janet Yellen there as Treasury Secretary, they're about to pull the rug out from under. So just remember that as you invest. I realize everybody gets kind of hysterical and everybody worries about China and this Evergrande thing, and everybody's worried about the Federal Reserve, and everybody's worried about upcoming earnings. I mean, there's a lot of things, frankly, to worry about. Certainly the debt ceiling is another one, but I don't think we're going to become the, I don't think Joe Biden is going to become the first president to default on U.S. debt. I really don't see that one happening. I don't think that Jerome Powell is going to just suddenly reverse course and make it really difficult for interest rates to stay low. I don't think that China is going to have a disastrous outcome. I do think that the government's there, much like our Fed is, right, for a little bit of a reason, and they will do what they can to help when push comes to shove. And so for this reason, I think it's important to take a deep breath and to go into the month of October, which can be kind of scary for some people, right? Don't forget, some of the big crashes have happened in October, and just say, okay, here's where we are. And look, if you have that time horizon to be in the markets for a while, you want to be in still. I mean, I really don't see, and I'll tell you, because I tend to feel these things often earlier than some people do. But I watch, of course, the Treasury market. And right now, we're not seeing a big enough spike in any of the yields on Treasury to really cause that much concern. So I still like the markets, even at these valuations. And I'm a believer in putting money in every single time it goes down. So Monday, for example, what did I do? I put money in. I was telling everybody, I wrote an article, trishintel.com. Do check that out on trishintel.com. I wrote an article saying, look, you want to be in this kind of environment. The sell-off is overdone. So that's my two cents for the day. I think that, you know, you always have to understand your own risks. And so I caution everybody, but I do want you to be getting in when there are opportunities, as opposed to at the very, very top. I encourage you again, go check out the newsletter, trishintel.com. You can sign up to get this podcast delivered to you every single day. Do make sure you subscribe to this channel. Make sure you do that. You give me a like, you give me a rumble, and I'll see you right back here tomorrow.